Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Okay, so today we have a very big and exciting guest. Cerise Castle is joining us today, a local reporter formerly of Santa Monica's famous public radio institution, KCRW. She has since gone independent, now is working as a freelancer. During the pandemic, Cerise has had a variety of really eye-catching stories. First, during last summer, all of our listeners probably remember the story about police breaking quarantine and lockdown rules to have a party in Hollywood. Cerise broke that story with On the Ground reporting and has since turned the underground nightclub scene into something of a beat. And we can definitely talk about that too. But what we really wanted to talk to Cerise about today, this afternoon, as we're recording this, is a media project that she had pitched at KCRW about black media in LA. We frequently talk about, well, the intersection of being black, being in these sorts of creative spaces, but also the fact that LA is a media desert and that puts additional pressure on workers of all kinds. Now, KCRW has come out with a My Black LA hashtag. And so we wanted to bring her in to talk about how that came about and how it seems to have been born of an idea that she originally brought to them, which was shut down, and just generally what her experience of being a black journalist in LA has been like. Cerise, thank you for joining us. We're really glad to have you.
Thank you for that fabulous introduction. Big and exciting journalist. Like, I'm going to write that down and put it on my wall.
Look, I mean, there's not a ton of journalists who have entire social media subgenres dedicated to, if you see this woman, watch out. Like, you're a star. I mean, that's levels that most people don't achieve.
That's clout, yeah.
Thank you.
So we want to start with just some general background. How long were you at KCRW, and when did you make the decision to leave the station?
So I was at KCRW for just over a year. I made the decision to leave, God, probably the second before I sent my resignation letter. It was something that I had been thinking about for probably seriously considering once Jennifer Farrow offered buyouts to our entire staff just a few days after we unionized.
Right.
That was when the wheels started turning. My girlfriend had spoken to me many times about how she felt that KCRW was impacting my mental health and well-being. I didn't really take her seriously, to my detriment. It really was interfering with, you know, my happiness. It was bringing back a lot of depression. But at the same time, I felt a lot of responsibility for the other employees of color there that had been counted out, that had been underpaid and overworked. I was very scared that if I left, no one would be there to fight for them. And that's something that, you know, I still have some guilt about, to answer that question.
I really want to talk about this unionization because it is so, just for our listeners, back what feels like a million years ago, but was really only about 6 months ago, there was an announcement by KCRW. There were these 30% operating budget cuts and nearly 30 people left the station, including yourself, Cerise. But I think that one of the things that is, I think, probably hard for people to, or is uncommon for people to even think about, is what it is actually like, if they're not black, to go through the sorts of microaggressions that you said that you went through on a daily basis. I'm a little bit curious, because you referenced these microaggressions as being part of what led to you feeling like the job was negatively impacting your daily life and your mental health. What was that environment, and why was it creating that pressure, do you feel, on you?
Yeah. So I'll tell you about this happened within my first week at KCRW. I walked up to the door. They have a pole where you use a key fob to tap in and enter and exit the building. Within my first week, I was stopped multiple times by different employees from entering the building, physically prevented me from entering the door.
Wow.
After I had tapped in with my key fob, demanding to see my ID, demanding to know where I was going, demanding to know who I was, what my title was, and what I was there to do. I never saw anyone else treated that way. And it happened to me from my first week all the way up until my last week.
Wow.
That never stopped. I spoke to management about it, and they told me that they would speak to staff. They told me that they would update a guide that they had for interacting with employees, which I don't think something like that should exist. And I told them that if there's generally a security concern, hire a security guard. You shouldn't be asking journalists, audio engineers, editors, photographers to police their workplace. That's disgusting.
Right.
That's uncalled for. That's not what we're signing up to do. If there's generally a concern, there should be a security guard. You shouldn't be asking people to take on some sort of fascist role to police who and who doesn't belong in the space. That was never adequately addressed. That's just one thing that I experienced. And that was something that I dealt with on a weekly basis. I'm getting like emotional talking about it, but dealing with something like that.
Yeah, I mean, like you're just showing up at work and
exactly
that like specter of like, are you going to be harassed on your way to do your job? And that this is happening too. I mean, in a broader context, during last summer, which was just incredibly trying for every Black American, especially as, you know, we're seeing, just to use one example, stories like the Central Park bird watcher who is like being policed in public space, like, and there's always the knowledge of how those situations can escalate. That's just an incredible stressor on you personally, I can only imagine.
Yeah. Thinking about last summer, you know, it really makes me think about when I was reporting on the protest for KCRW. You know, one thing that happened was I was shot by LAPD with a rubber bullet. I went on air about 10 minutes after that happened. I'm really proud that I was able to do that. Like, that's definitely like a high point of my career, being able to bring light to this situation. But, you know, one thing that I was really disappointed with was how KCRW handled addressing that with the Los Angeles Police Department. You know, pretty immediately after I was hit, the Los Angeles Board of Supervisors wrote a motion that addressed violence against journalists in LA County. And my situation was actually noted. And that prompted me to follow up with our COO, Paul Benham, COO of KCRW, to ask him, you know, had any complaints been filed, because I was injured. I actually ended up not being able to walk for almost 6 months because of what happened to me. And, you know, he told me that he filed a complaint and nothing came of it. Now, that really troubled me, because that same weekend, there were many other journalists injured. One that comes to mind is Adolfo Guzman of KPCC. And
yeah.
I believe we actually share an attorney for this particular incident. But, you know, KPCC was really good about coming out and making a statement saying that we don't stand for this. They supported Adolfo when Josie was arrested. This is the same thing. They doubled down and gave her so much support. I'm still fighting KCRW to respond to my emails about where the hell is my complaint? What happened to my complaint? Have you heard anything from the LAPD? Have you heard anything from OIR? They just ignore me. And I feel used. It's like, I can't think of anything that sums it up better than that. You're sending your Black reporter out to report on racial violence. She's shot by a police officer. And you can't take care of her when she's injured, when she can't mm-hmm. walk. You can't follow up and make sure that she's good when your sister station is doing like that exact same with the same attorney that y'all work with. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's really horrible.
I was curious too, because that was such a not having the personal insight into what you were going through, the extent of your injuries. That's so horrible, and I really hope that you're doing better now. But I think from the outside though, there was a pretty obvious disparity in the response between the two stations. And I personally picked up on the Josie Wong incident that you were talking about, where she was attacked brutally and arrested by two deputies of the LA Sheriff's Department. And there was this really strange episode following that where an Associated Press journalist was interviewing Sheriff Villanueva, talking to him about the violence that his office had done to journalists. And this whole thing was so strange and sort of vile, but like part of his answer was that it was justified because he misidentified KPCC as having been responsible for your reporting
right.
about this Sassafras Saloon story. And, I mean, just to make this even weirder, then on Twitter, Libby Denkman of KPCC points out that that was actually not a KPCC story. That was a story of yours. And Paul Bennin, you just mentioned, the COO at KCRW, put on Twitter this denial that KCRW had published or broadcasted any claims about right. sheriff's deputies being at the Sassafras Saloon, which you Correct. Responded to by tagging the New Union. So I'm just curious, like,
yes.
as somebody seeing that playing out,
it.
Like, what was happening in your mind? Like, when you see that denial, what are you thinking? Like, what is your response?
Typical.
Internally.
Typical. It's honestly, I'm shocked but not surprised.
Yeah.
This is basically, that's just playing out in public everything that I went through in behind closed doors. You know, one thing I recall, one incident that really troubles me that happened when I was at KCRW is I had an intern that I was working with. She was in her probably like 19, 20 years old, college student. And we were working in the studio. And on the other side of the glass was the All Things Considered host. His name is Larry Perel. He was unhappy with a call that I made, and he chose to come into the studio that I was in with our intern and proceed to scream at me at the top of his lungs for about 5 minutes in front of my intern, telling me that I was underqualified for my job, that I didn't know what I was doing, that I didn't take my job seriously, that he thought I didn't want to be there. Turned around and left. My intern was in tears. I had to take her out to the bathroom and tell her that this isn't what normally happens here at this station, that that isn't how men should treat you, that that's not how people you work with treat you, that that is unacceptable. And then I had to turn around and go right back and work with him. That happened every day. Something like that happened every day.
It's just horrifying. I mean, can't even imagine being able to navigate on the various levels of having to defend yourself, stick up for yourself, maintain a professional demeanor, and also try and prevent somebody that you're working close with and trying to mentor not to be scared out of an industry that they're passionate about. Like, that's, I don't know how you did it, frankly. That just seems like
I did it.
seems like too much for any one person to handle for any length of time.
Yeah, shout out to my therapist for that.
I'm curious though. So you tagged the union. The union is brand new at that point in time. Did you have a role in that unionization effort? And obviously the way that it ended up playing out, you left shortly thereafter because you and everyone else was offered a buyout. But did you have any sort of hope that the union coming in might change those sorts of, that's not even a microaggression, that's just straight out aggression. But did you have any hope that the union being there might change conditions, or on an ongoing basis that it is changing conditions for people of color working at the station?
So there's a lot to dig into in that question. Yes, I was involved in the unionization effort. It was one of the reasons that I actually chose to go work for KCRW. Prior to this, I had been at Vice News on HBO. And I'll just say I took a significant pay cut choosing to go into nonprofit radio from television news. Mm-hmm. But I was really excited about the chance to work at a community DIY station that I had grown up listening to and just be a part of what I thought was of movement toward the kind of workplace that I wanted to be a part of, the kind of workplace where the employees work together collectively to make everything better for everybody. So I got involved in the union. I got a reality check pretty quickly about the union once I got involved with the organizing process. It came to my attention that they had not conducted a pay equity salary that looked at not only gender disparity, but disparity by race. That mm-hmm. is, I really don't see how you can talk about equity and inclusion when you're not examining who's in the room and who isn't. So making that discovery, I very quickly lost a lot of the hope and optimism that I had about the union.
It's kind of just like finding out. I would guess it's kind of like finding out that things are much further back in the process than you had thought. Like you're like, okay, we're at this point and we need to push forward.
But then here's you're like, the
oh,
thing,
wait, we're
Scott,
actually a mile down the road.
Here's the thing, Scott. They were just weeks away from signing a contract, and that conversation hadn't been had. Which is a huge red flag. If you're not talking about this stuff, I don't see how you're weeks away from a contract. That shouldn't be
then
happening.
It's like, okay, this is going to be something that comes up for the next contract, basically, right? Like
in
it's not even
years.
A conversation. Exactly. Yeah, that is really hard. I'm curious. We talked a little bit at the top about this new debuted hashtag #MyBlackLA that was just announced on Twitter by KCRW. You have a really powerful thread that we'll link to in our show notes that I think all of our listeners should read about the way in which you actually proposed this idea, I think sometime last year, and then it basically went nowhere because of COVID and budget and et cetera, all of the excuses that I think a lot of people might expect when management just doesn't necessarily want to do something. But now that idea has come back around. You were not given credit for it. I'm curious, can you tell us why you approached management with the idea to do something like this, do a project focusing on Black artists, content creators, and how did you come up with that idea and why in the first place?
Yeah, so that was something that when I joined KCRW, that was one of the things that was on the list of things that I wanted to bring to them. You know, I wanted to bring what I had learned about TV news for creating like great viral videos about, you know, newsworthy things. You know, KCRW is very white. Like we all know this. If you listen to Morning Becomes Eclectic, like it's in the title right there. Like, and you know, Los Angeles County is not a white place. So coming in there, that was something that I saw as a strength. You're hiring me, a really talented multimedia journalist that could, you know, really bring you up to speed with a significant amount of the county that you haven't been servicing for years, for since I was a child, at least.
Right.
One of the first emails I got at KCRW was an all staff email saying the air is better in Santa Monica.
What? What does that mean? What?
Oh my God. There's so many layers.
Like the air quality? What does that mean?
Truly, what does it mean?
What does that mean? Yeah.
So I had that idea coming in. I was going through my stuff with the union, seeing that, you know, people really didn't care about race issues there, or so I felt. I was going through my macro aggressions, racist behavior that I was facing on a daily basis. I also filed a complaint about the racist stuff I was going through with HR. I had several employees join me on that. And I also included, you know, transphobic things that were being said. God, what's her name? Frances Anderton sent out a staff-wide email saying that we should have J.K. Rowling on KCRW to talk about her views on why trans people aren't real, or whatever. Sonia Geis, the news manager for KCRW, told me and Jerome Campbell that structural racism isn't real in a meeting. So after I filed this complaint, all of this stuff is ongoing, and I was still feeling generous and sort of the mindset that sunlight was the best medicine. So I thought, you know what? You know what'll stamp out all this racism? If we make a show with Black people, get some more Black people in the building, get some more Latinx people in the building. Let's get these people in the building and let's make some content for these people so we can just shake this up and just get flush out all these horrible people and their horrible ideas. Let's just replace them with better people. And, you know, the response to that was, that's a really cool idea, Cerise. I really like that, Cerise. I did a lot of extra work that I wasn't compensated for outside of my schedule, setting up meetings with people like Jeff Weiss over at The Land, Javier Cabral over at LA Taco, you know, other people that I've seen out like doing their own thing independently. I set up meetings with them and Paul Benham. And, you know, everyone at KCRW management said, this is a good idea. This is a good idea. This is a good idea. When the date came for this project to get the word on whether or not it would receive funding, all of a sudden it wasn't a great idea anymore. It was, I believe the words he used in the email that I posted was, you know, it would be a challenge to do a homegrown show. Mind you, KCRW produces several homegrown shows. I believe that's actually the model of running a radio station, is producing homegrown shows.
Well, and then they do have shows that they've started more recently. Greater LA, which is a show that, in full disclosure, I am sometimes a guest on, was started, what, like a year and a half ago?
Yes.
There's also shows like Left, Right, and Center that are, you know, have been on the station for decades, it feels like, and that are hosted by people who don't live here, who aren't even really part of the KCRW family or part of the KCRW union.
Right. I also, for full disclosure, I also pitched this show there in 2016 or something like that. Not anyone who is still there, but that also would have been the homegrown show.
I know that you don't know the answer to this, or at least that you're not part of the discussions that have gone on in the developing of My Black LA, what KCRW is actually proceeding out of this. But basically, my question is, what has changed in the time since you pitched this idea and now? It hasn't been that long. We're still in the pandemic.
There ain't no more Black people at KCRW. That's what's changed. They've got Black ideas, and they're making them without any Black people. That's what's changed.
Yeah, because so you left. Jerome left also, right? Tyler Boudreau left. Who is there? There basically is nobody left as far as Black employees or Black content creators.
To my knowledge, they have one person in the news department.
Right.
The news department is about seven people. One person is Black. I believe she's part-time. Mm-hmm. They have Novena on Morning Becomes Eclectic, which she co-hosts. And as far as content, there you go.
Right. So I mean that we like I said, we've talked so much about
how LA has become and is still becoming this sort of media desert. Media nationally has deeply entrenched problems of racism and, in particular, anti-blackness. And it has been very hard for black journalists to even get a foothold. We had a discussion. There is a question coming, I promise. We had a discussion not that long ago about the LA Times, where they were like patting themselves on the back for having a black woman journalist, Angel Jennings, covering South LA. Then they promoted her to the masthead because then they could pat themselves on the back for having a black woman journalist on the masthead. And then they were like, well, now we don't have anybody covering South LA again. And it's just kind of like highlights, like, when you are so focused on what could be called these like token achievements for black journalism, these structural issues just like don't get addressed because you don't really have the resources to do all of the, you can't use the same person to meet all of these needs that exist within the community. I'm just curious, like, how are you finding freelance journalism? Like, is there a place that you've been able to plug in as a black journalist? Or, like, I guess just like what is your outlook on the state of media and your place in it going forward?
You know what the great thing has been is since I've been getting loud about all the bullshit that I've been put through, I've been actually given a lot more opportunities by people. I've had editors reaching out to me directly to offer me not just freelance stories, but full-time positions, saying that they've read my work, that they love my work, that I'm a talent that they would love to have on their team. So my outlook is, you know, if you're going through something in your workplace, call it the fuck out. I don't know if I can swear on this podcast, but
please.
This is what I tell my students. Like, you don't need to put up with this. I feel like so often, like, people tell themselves, especially people of color, we tell ourselves, not just black people, Latinx people, Asian people, people of all colors, we tell ourselves that we have to fit into the white man's box, right? That we have to put up with this stuff. And what I'm learning is that you really don't. Like, you really don't have to tolerate it. It's bad for your mental health. It's bad for your physical health. You don't have to. If you're going through something, call it out. And, like, if you're afraid to, like, truly you don't need to be at that job. You really don't.
Context of white supremacy. The white man's box. For 12 years, we have spent a good bit of time talking about that right there. System of white supremacy. The white woman, white man, and white child's box. If you want to call it that. That is the problem. Can't have a system of white supremacy without white women. Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast. Hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Did you hear her drop that F-bomb? Just talked about cursing. Like, wow. I don't know if she'll be thought of as some loud, angry black female. Oh, she already is. She already said that, so. Might as well get your profanities in if they already think of you in that manner. This is our weekly broadcast on neutralizing workplace racism. Today's date, Friday, February 26, 2021. So I have been told. Just as we were ready to go live, today is a great illustration. There should never be a program for workplace racism where there's silence. If we had a program, even if we did a program, if it was just five of us, let's say we generally have substantially more than five people listening live, but I'm just saying, you know, for argument's sake, let's say it was just five of us. Black Panther Party started with less. So us five get together and we're going to talk about racism in the workplace. I mean, if you got five people, that should be easily enough to take up 2-3 hours. Five people, easily. Everybody could get a good 30 minutes or so to talk. You don't think you have 30 minutes worth of commentary to talk about workplace? We just heard Miss Castle. She took about the, in fact, we didn't even hear the whole interview. And this is just about one component of workplace racism. I am sure if we talked about some of her other jobs, there could be a lot more. Added emphasis, as we were going live, literally, I went to tweet. You can time, it's all timestamped, so you can check and see the exact time to the second when I tweeted. So I was going to post online on social media, which I despise, but I'm, you know, doing my diligence. I'm posting, hey, neutralizing workplace racism, tune in, victims of racism, you need content, help, thoughts, counter racist input on things you are dealing with on the job, or if you figured out some codification, come share. So I go to post, and you know how they have the what's trending on the sideline. Most of the time it's been COVID, or the police have shot and killed someone, or Donald Trump's upset about the election, that type of thing. I look, and this time the report is, go back and read the tweet. Exclusive. More than a dozen current and former Amazon corporate employees told, I don't know who, I don't follow Del Rey, so I have to see who that is, that they saw a pattern of systemic racial bias, white supremacy racism, at the company, which affected black employees' career growth and personal lives. They didn't say black and brown. They didn't say black and trans. They didn't say black and Latinx. They said black employees. Let's see a little bit. When Shannon Kelly Ray started working at Amazon in 2019 as a global manager of diversity in the company's cloud computing division, she had big ambitions for her new job. She had nearly two decades of experience leading diversity and inclusion efforts inside important institutions like Washington State's governor's office. Hey, Seattle, woo-woo. She'd never worked at an influential global business leader like Amazon. But less than a year later, Kelly Ray quit. Her tenure inside the company convinced her that Amazon's corporate workplace has deep systemic issues that disadvantage black employees and workers from other underrepresented backgrounds. I'm going to pause right there. That disadvantage? I mean, that's a lot of times they just, it's deliberate. I don't know if it's a white person or non-white person who wrote this piece at Vox, but the language used when we talk about racism becomes very niggardly, very imprecise, very vague. We can't just say practice racism. We can't just say that harms black people, mistreats black people. We could just say, no, it's got to be that disadvantage black employees. When do people use disadvantage as a verb? I disadvantage you. I was disadvantaged last Woo! Niggardly, that's what I said. Plantational, that's one of the words we heard this week. Black employees and workers from underrepresented backgrounds. I don't know what that means either. And she was dismayed by her perception that Amazon leadership was unwilling to listen to internal experts about how to identify and fix these problems. Dedicated. Amazon was not doing these things in a way that represents best practices that would advance diversity and inclusion in any way that is meaningful and thoughtful, she told Recode. Let me add, Amazon appeared to be taking steps backward instead of forward. Another metaphor, dedication to racism, white supremacy. Stepping, two-stepping, half-stepping. Kelly Ray, who is black, is one of more than a dozen former and current Amazon corporate employees, 10 of whom are black, who told Recode in interviews over the past few months that they felt the company has failed to create a corporate-wide environment where all black employees feel welcome and respected. Instead, they told Recode that, in their experience, black employees at the company often face both direct and insidious bias that harms their careers and personal lives. All of the current and former employees, other than Kelly Ray, spoke on condition of anonymity, either because of the terms of their employment with Amazon or because they fear retribution from Amazon for speaking out about their experiences. Let's see. They don't want to hire black people. Let's see. I'm trying to see if they have any juicy racist jokes or one final anecdote to share. Let's see. Oh, got one, I think. Let's see if there's a better one. I think I got one. There's actually several, but I'll go back. Oh, they talk about facial recognition too in here. So there's lots, but I'll just pick the one that I saw first because this both of these come up. The one that I was not going to read, it talked about employees being told that they are not smart or articulate. We've heard that before. And then also the challenges about not taking care of workers' health. But the anecdote I'll read, let's see. Some of those who spoke to Recode recounted what they saw as biased, racist interactions inside Amazon's corporate offices, including a white manager who told a black female employee unprompted that his ancestors owned slaves, but I'm pretty sure they were good to their slaves. Others described microaggressions, there's that word again, like being called out by managers and peers for not smiling or being friendly enough. Have we heard that one like 50 million times on the context of white supremacy? Why aren't you smiling? Something wrong? You know, you seem kind of aloof, like you don't want to be a part of the family. Uncles and aunts and cousins that I'm working with here. As I said, the only reason I saw this, I just was going to post, oh, we're broadcasting, and boop, that's right there. Workplace racism, massive problem, something that could be discussed all the time. There should never be a dull, quiet moment where there is nothing to add. If you have thoughts, commentary, observations, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943. Pound, press *61 if you would like to participate. If you figured out how to neutralize that charge of you've got an unfriendly, unsmiling, surly black employee, if you figured out how to neutralize that charge, please share. I can one recommendation I give, that's why make sure you speak. You do not want to be the person who's silent. You speak to everyone. If that means you speak first, no problem. But at minimum, he always speaks and, you know, afternoon, morning, telling, hey, Helen, Howard, Mr. Roger, you know, he speaks to everybody, says morning and afternoon and all that. So we can't say that he doesn't, you know, offer salutations when we see him on a regular basis and that sort of thing, and always asks questions. I mean, gee whiz, you can't get away from him without getting 5 or 10 questions in, that sort of thing. Let's see, back to what I intended to talk about. This report got me off track, but not really. The report that we heard at the beginning, now that one I saw way early in the week, was prepped for it. Cerise Castle, black female journalist down in California, I believe, victim of white supremacy. So she did this podcast early in the week where she talked about her views of the white supremacy she experienced working at KCRW in the journalism industry, period. And in fact, they wrote about this in the LA Times, because I think I read about this in the LA Times first, and then I heard the podcast. So the LA Times, their report, KCRW accused of blatant racism. I'm so glad they didn't, you know, get all mealy-mouthed and biased. Microaggressions. No, KCRW accused of blatant racism by a former producer. I want to give you some because she has some great anecdotes that they didn't even include in the report. So I'm skipping down a little bit. She originally outlined her experiences, this is talking about Ms. Castle, in a farewell letter to staff last year, accepting a buyout along with 24 other station employees on both the podcast called LA Podcast, which we heard, and Twitter. Castle, who worked at KCRW for a little more than a year and before that was a producer for Vice, described the station's lack of racial representation and accused management of appropriating her ideas. I think we've heard that one a few times as well. She continues, I've had employees tell me that my hair was militaristic, and she has that in quotes. I'm still struggling. I have thus far still failed to identify the African Liberation Army mentioned in Dr. Layla Africa's Nutricide, worst book ever, still. Much less militaristic Negro hair. What is militarist? That's why I said, man, it's so common. People, when they say Gus T, it's been 12 years of that radical, militant Gus T. All of that, like, what are you talking about? Militaristic hair? I can only assume, you know what they say about assuming. I can only assume this person, Miss Castle, does not have chemically mutilated hair. Must be coming out of her scalp as the creator intended. That's all I can conclude. But I mean, if that's the case, how is that militaristic? Does she have a nuclear missile silo somewhere in her cornrows? Continue. And I mean, you work with journalists, right? These are not the toothless white people in Appalachia, right? So these are white people who probably have gone to school, may have even gone to college, got some advanced degrees. They may own a thesaurus. They tend to be skilled with words. These are like the Jeffrey Toobins, right? So you know about word choice. Have you ever in your life heard a blonde-haired person describe just their hair as militaristic? Continuing. And that I remind them of a gangster. And she has that in quotes spelled out, G-A-N-G-S-T-A, which I think is important because I've said it's been my experience personally in the workplace. And we've had about a gabillion people dial in over the years who have talked about when race soldiers want to come into the workplace and get extra tacky, maybe for Black History Month, and they want to show all the slang that they picked up from their days of listening to old Kanye West and Drake and all the rest of it. Let me show you what I picked up. Oh, yeah, partner. Do all the Negro pronunciations and such. So I'm pretty sure it was gangsta, as she has in quotes. I've been screamed at in front of my intern, as we heard, and nothing was done when voicing my thoughts on segments and programming. I've been told that I am loud, angry. Heard that one, as I said, about a gabillion times over the years, the loud, angry, hostile, violent, militaristic Black person. That's one of those types of terms. It can be awesome to just write that down. I haven't tried that one out, but to just write it down. Wow. Cerise, your hair is just, it is looking so vibrant and militaristic. I don't know. Did you go to the gun range this weekend or something? I don't know. And just write that down. I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Bob? I didn't quite hear you. I was trying to listen to our former President Trump tell us about making his comeback. You said vibrant and militaristic. That was what it was? Okay, let me get that. Militaristic hair. Mm-hmm. Okay, at the gun range. All right. Anything else? Okay. And then I would go right back to work. That's the one. I wouldn't even get involved in trying to squabble and gripe. What do you mean I've got militaristic hair? And I would just write that down, put that in my workplace journal for the day. I'm pretty sure most white, like I said, you're not ignorant. Anybody in here, if you've ever in your life described someone's hair as violent, speed dial 720-716-7300, the code 564-943#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. does not get any better than tacky. I'm of the opinion, I think mental health is so important. She talked about that. These types of episodes, I don't call them microaggressions. This is terrorism. She talked about how it was impacting her health. She didn't want to be there. We've talked about this tons. This is how you end up with people who end up gaining 25 pounds, being depressed, having mental health issues, all of that. That is not micro, tiny. That is terrorism, where you end up being fearful of calling. Do I say something? I don't think my hair is militaristic. Do I say something about that? I don't think I'm a loud, angry, foul-mouthed black person. Do I say something about that? Am I going to be fired? They already think I'm unfriendly and don't smile enough. That is terrorism. Call things by their proper name. But I think in terms of mental health, understanding these are not my homies. These are not my friends. I understand what it means to be white. I expect them to say things like that, that I'm angry, that I'm loud, that I'm unfriendly, that I'm uncouth, that I'm inarticulate, that I'm not qualified for this job, to any form of mistreatment. That's what I said. It's not disadvantaged. I don't expect to be disadvantaged. I expect to be mistreated. And so I just go about the business of what are things that I can do to stop this. If someone is speaking to me in a hostile manner, we've talked about that. Excuse me, Bob. Wow, you seem a little loud. You can even use some of their language. You seem a little loud. I don't feel like we're having the most constructive dialogue for me to actually hear what's being said. Maybe we can stop. Is it a time that I can meet you if there are concerns, if I've done something incorrect? And that might be. You can let me know. But this, I'm even feeling, what's my word? Unsafe. Woo! That is the buzzword that can sometimes bring everything to a screeching halt. I'm feeling unsafe. Woo! I might even need a moment to just kind of get my bearings here. Maybe we can meet in a calmer manner to discuss what's happening. Very important, because I'm of the opinion white people will do. They love to do things like this, to come humiliate you in front of either your coworkers, your peers, or if you're a manager, you're supposed to be a quote unquote manager, what have you, a position of you're in charge, so-called. They love that. Let me come and yell at you and show you up and talk to you like you're nothing. You're ignorant and stupid. It might even turn out that you didn't even do anything wrong, and they will come back quietly when you are by yourself and then behave professionally. Oh, I'm so sorry. That was disgraceful. We've had some of that just this year. The Rona, you know, has stressed me out. We ran out of hand sanitizer and I haven't had my mind. I haven't got my coffee yet, but it turns out you didn't even do it. That Becky down the hall, I'm going to go bust her upside. But you didn't do anything wrong. You are my favorite gangster in the building. Doesn't get any better than tacky, but already expecting these sorts of racist acts. And then, as that's what we do here, thinking, what would I respond? What's the best way to respond? What to say? First response can even be, let me catch my breath, make sure that they don't just get me with a reflexive emotional response. It is totally correct. Militaristic hair. Are you serious? Question lane, even better. What do you mean militaristic? And then get the pen back out or break out the phone. Let me take my note. What did you mean militaristic, Bob? Write that one down for Black History Month. My militaristic hair and what that means. But mental health is super important. I'm so glad she brought that up. Having proper expectations of individuals classified as white, really everybody, the non-white people, the black people, they're not my homies either. Not in the workplace. All of this. She talked about, you know, trying to bring up racism in the workplace. I do not encourage that. Now we read two today. I didn't even intend to read the report from Amazon where we heard the exact same thing, where she said, man, it seems like the folks at Amazon are committed geez, they committed, but they're taking steps backward instead of forward. That was the metaphor that Ms. Kelly Ray used. I'm committed to racism, white supremacy. And so black people bringing up racism, and I'm going to make them aware or help educate them or try and address this, I've just not seen where it goes anywhere constructive. Most often, the non-white person, the black person gets fired, or maybe lots of non-white people get fired. And at minimum, the problem is not solved. That's what I've seen happen over and over again, even if they give a lip service and make it seem they're pretending like they want to address these issues and they want to hear from you. They might even come and solicit your input. And no, thank you. I don't even, you know, think about these type of things that seriously. I'm just here to do a job, or however you want to phrase it. But I would not recommend getting involved in those projects. White people, because white people are dedicated to white supremacy, racism, they are not going to come to these projects with a sincere effort. If anything, it all may be an effort to further study the Negro, find out which of these Negroes we need to get rid of, which might be a problem, infect some of the other good Negroes we got on the plantation here. Just speculating. Let's see. Any other notes that I wanted to get from the report we heard from Ms. Castle? I thought it was horrible. She talked about them sending her out to cover the police situation. We'll send out our Negro reporter to cover a Negro issue. And then she gets shot in the process. And the tacky way that the paper responded, and even the justification that the enforcement officers gave for why this happened, and to her and the other female reporter, does not get any better than tacky, even dangerous and terroristic at times. And this reminded me of what was happening like 70 years ago. Not that I was alive when it was happening, but many black people talked about the same thing happening, that this was during the 60s when you were having so-called riots and what have you, that white media outlets, some of them, started hiring black people, black reporters at this time for just this reason. Good, we'll hire some black people. We don't want to send white people in and have them risk their lives. Send out our Negro reporter and have them, you know, cover what happened with this riot, or, you know, the Watts Rebellion. Yeah, go out and get the word. Put your life in jeopardy. Maybe the police will kill you or whatever else. White man's box. White man, white woman, white child's box. The system of white supremacy. Let's see. I'll get in one quick email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. I'll get in one quick email and then we will proceed. It has been such a unpleasant, furious year, even though it feels like 2020 never ended. I still have not updated my resume, which I think is pretty abysmal. I had hoped to have that done 2 weeks ago, and I still have not updated. I say that all the time. We should keep our resume updated, just getting out of that stagnation. If you're not in a healthy spot on your plantation, definitely have your resume updated. And if you are in a healthy spot, well, then you should have a super updated, sparkly resume to reflect where you are in your career at this point. But update the resume, keep it polished, looking for better, greener fields, as they say. Let's see. Workplace racism. Female victim of racism writes in. I'm writing to update you on my son's school situation. His racist teacher went on a 1 month hiatus and the parents were not told why. Is that Rona related or just disciplinary action or? It's interesting. Continuing, during this time, I'd even be curious if I had a relationship with this educator and he didn't reach out to tell us like, oh, I'm going to be stepping away for a little while. This is, you know, person's going to be coming in. I've already got lecture plans set up. This is the protocol. I'll be back at such and such. Like, that would seem like the type of relationship I would want with my child's educator. Not, oh, your son's or daughter's teacher is going to be gone and they'll be coming back in June, maybe. Like, what? Jerry Sandusky. Let's see. During this time, My son improved greatly with his Latinx substitute teacher. I hope this is a non-white person. I'm so proud to announce that my son, 6 years old, got his first Student of the Month award. Congratulations. Spectacular. I just saw a report today. Super in sync. I just saw it minutes ago. I have to see if I can post it within the next 30 minutes or so, where they were talking about the lack of black students. It might be on my Facebook page. Let me see. Is it on my Facebook page? Facebook.com/ The Problem is White People. But they were talking about the lack of black students who excel and get pushed to what they call Jamal Abdul Aleem. Why do public schools so often fail to identify gifted black students? Donna Ford, the number one reason for the underrepresentation of black students in gifted education is the lack of teacher referrals, even when black students are highly gifted. I definitely think stereotypes and biases hinder educators from seeing black students' gifts and talents. In most schools in the U.S., if you are not referred by an educator, you will not move through the identification pipeline for gifted education programs and services. They know how to identify and get you to the prison pipeline. No problem identifying black males for that. But the gifted, I didn't even know there was such a thing. I'd never heard that metaphor. Have you all heard that metaphor before? The gifted pipeline? The pipeline for gifted education programs, that's it. The pipeline for gifted education programs. I've never heard that metaphor. The only pipeline that I know about for young children is the pipeline to the big house, making license plates, Shawshank Redemption. Continuing. Not to be lost. Congratulations, 6-year-old black scholar. And he could have had it's almost not even something to clap about. Like, man, if we didn't have this racist teacher in the building, your son could have had 50 of these by now. He might have skipped the whole grade in school, but being retarded, Mr. Fuller, accurate word use. That's what happens to us. We get retarded instead of just being able to, I am brilliant. I am the smartest person here. Oh, get in the back. You don't know what you're. This was the one, if my memory serves, this is the one where he was identifying the other white children and saying, oh, you are the greatest reader in the world. Oh, you're so smart, Timmy, and all these other white children, while her, hush, Leroy. He was encouraging little Thomas Jefferson. I remember that. There was little TJ in the back. He gets all the encouragement. Yes, you're so bright. Use that word intentionally. Continuing, I had issues with his racist teacher after the very first week of class when he encouraged the kids to compete in an unhealthy way by naming the white student because he read the most books. The number of books the students read is confidential and should not have been shared. I immediately reported this to the principal, but she did not change his class. A couple months later, he gave my son a huge bag of candy, I remember, without my permission. He also calls on that one white student repeatedly and sets him up as the teacher's helper, of course. Let's see. Example. Like Thomas said, we're going to write. So his name was Thomas Jefferson. I said, my memory is not that bad some days. Great job, Thomas. Can you tell the class how you figured that out? They get all that reinforcement. Sometimes it's even tactile. They'll come and rub them on the head. They don't have militaristic hair, so they'll come and give them a pat on the head or a pat on the back or, you know, Jerry Sandusky, but they'll come and give lots of reinforcement. Oh, you are so smart. You are the best reader ever. Oh, you are a genius. You are so brilliant. All of that. And then, like I said, they get to Leroy. Shut up, Leroy. Oh, you talking again? That's going to be a reference. Yep. We're going to have to get you. Wait till I talk to your parents. Do you have parents? She continues. This teacher is unable to genuinely engage and connect with his mostly Latinx students, and now he failed to mention Black History Month. What's Black History? They opted out of that in a lot of schools, and so I'm told. Yesterday, after almost half a year of reporting to the principal, I was able to get my son removed from his classroom. I explained to the principal that he failed to mention Black History Month and thought assigning a book about Michelle Obama was enough. I wonder what book. I asked the principal if it's normal for them to ignore Black History Month, and to my dismay, he said this: I don't know anything about that. That is a popular white response to just not answer your question, even if you're talking to the principal, person who should know. I'll talk to someone about that. You're absolutely right. I don't know what the teachers are doing. I'd have to write that one down. Are you the principal? And you're saying you don't know what the teachers are doing. Is it your job to know what the teachers are doing? That could be. I don't have children. I am not in any way critiquing. I'm just, the logic would just ask me to follow that up. Like, that is appalling. If this is a principal or someone who's supposed to be in charge, a white person at the school, and you're conceding you don't know what the teachers are doing, let's have a PTA meeting right now. Let's see. Lastly, I was on YouTube and saw a comment that read, I told my students that they can do their Black History report on DaBaby because he's good. He's a good representation of a father. I cringed. When did Black History Month turn into complete foolishness? Racist white supremacist. It's always been that way. No disrespect to Carter G. Woodson. What can I do to make sure the school does something about Black History Month in the future? Brightest blessings to you all. I will end with this quote. You cannot teach slavery without teaching the revolts, the resistance, and the resilience. I'm glad that my memory did not fail me totally on this one. I believe I said before, I don't have children. Man, the most important thing, Gus T does not have children, so it may be totally true. He doesn't know what he is talking about with regards to child rearing or any component of this. That's it. I think I said then, white people are dedicated to racism, white supremacy, and because this was like months ago, right? This was at the beginning of the school year. So my thought process was, if it's this much of a problem now, maybe we should be looking at getting him out of this class or even out of this school. Like, if you're going to get him out of the class and they're unwilling to do so, like, we might have to look at something else, because this is just going to go on. And you're seeing that. That's what I mean. It's just going to go on. It would just be every day having to go and talk to them about this and talk to them about that. And I mean, you have a brilliant young child. You know that better than I do. He just got his first Student of the Month award. He should have, like I said, dozens of those probably by now. Being in that environment in particular, I think I said this before, but even if I didn't, I'll add it. Particularly, you doing the correct thing, all of the Black self-respect in the world, monitoring your child, going up to talk to these folks and everything, talking to the principal and all the rest of it, A+, exactly what you're supposed to be doing. But you doing that, they just are looking at you. You concluded that this teacher is a racist, right? That's what she said. As racist, they're going to look at you. Who is this troublemaking Negro coming up here telling us how to run our school? And she's upset about how we talk to her, you know, little Negro child and all the rest of it. That, in my view, for a lot of times, they just become even more vindictive. I think I said that word last week, where they will even mistreat your child even more. I have experienced this from the school end. And I have experienced from the other end, seeing this from, oh, okay, that's the way that they do it. And you act like you're going to go tell on us and try to get us in trouble. And we'll show. I have seen this, experienced it personally. So I would say, if you can, and I know with everything that's going on right now with the Rona and, you know, people have jobs and all the rest of it, if it is possible, I would be trying to get my child out of that school. I just don't. I mean, to know that you have someone, a teacher that you've identified as a racist, and there are these problems all the time, and it seems like it's retarding your child's academic growth. Yeah, we would have to look at something. And it's super tough. But we talked to lots of parents who've kind of hit this crossroads and had to figure out whether it was homeschooling, if they had another school in the area, if they had some sort of independent school. But that's why it's so much to think about when you have offspring racists make it so difficult to parent. And then you add everything with COVID-19 on top of it. But I do not see that environment improving, especially for a very young child. I think you said your child is six. Man, let me go back to that report that I just read. The number one reason for the underrepresentation of black students in gifted education is the lack of teacher referrals. I don't have children, so it's way easier to sit up here and say that as opposed to putting that in plan. If we have folks who have commentary, again, not for spectators. So if you figured out some things that work well to solve problems in the workplace, please share. If you are dealing with some difficulties, some problems, and you would like suggestions on how to solve problems without creating new problems, we will do our best to offer logical suggestions to help kind of process and think through your situation. If we have any parents, if you have any counter racist logic about the school situation that we talked about, folks remember this one from before because we talked about this, but if you have any folks who have any suggestion, any parents, not just folks, any parents specifically, don't be a spectator for what you would do in this situation. Oh, I guess she was talking about Black History Month. Man, if I'm talking to a racist, how much can I realistically expect a racist to do in celebration of Black History Month? Question. I just don't, I would do that on my own. I would just talk to my child. If they do something at school, I would expect them to do like fried chicken and watermelon. Cause they've done that. I could go find a bunch of those. They'll do that. They'll go and we'll get Popeye's fried chicken sandwiches and this will be Black History Month. They'll go get the old-fashioned Aunt Jemima pancake syrup bottles. This will be Black History Month. Watermelon Day. Watermelons with BLM carved in the side. They could do that, or they'll do nothing at all. Or, like you said, they'll do something lame that's kind of, we'll get Michelle Obama's book. Huh? We'll get Clarence Thomas's book. We'll read that. We'll do a project on the Fat Boys. That's Black History Month. That's going to be it for Black. Like, I'm of the opinion it's not worth the time and energy to go and try and, in the workplace or in your child's school, it's not worth the time and energy. They're not going to do it correctly. Just invest that time and energy on your own as a family or attempted parents or whatever it is to supplement and do that material. And you can talk about, as I said, what they do or don't do in the school or in the workplace or even in your own workplace. Let's see. We'll get to the phone lines, folks who dialed in if you have commentary. Let's see. First few folks who dialed in with a hand up. Oh, well, wait a minute. Let's see. Founder, Black Talk Radio Network, Mr. Scotty Reed. We'll get him. Mr. Reed, you should be with us, sir.
Good evening to you, Gus, and the listeners. Man, I've just really been enjoying workplace racism, listening to the podcast over these past couple of weeks. But what prompted me to call in is what you were describing with the schoolwork. I just found myself in a similar situation in regards to my 10-year-old grandson. And this is what happened. So, like his mom, you know, she's still working and everything, although she lost another job because of the pandemic, they shut down. But she found another job. And so that's my oldest grandson, is usually with me or my mother all the time. We're the ones that's usually helping him with his schoolwork. Not to say that his mom don't, but she's a single parent, and we're here to help her pick up the slack. And so this is February, like you said, Black History Month, and he has what's called a reading comprehension exercise that he's supposed to do. So it's usually some it's usually an essay or something about a historical figure. So I just happened to be helping him this day when, guess who it was? But Thomas Jefferson. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Black History Month. They won't teach these little kids about Thomas Jefferson, but they want to erase black people. Now let me explain what I mean by that. You can't talk about white supremacy or white supremacists and then leave out black people, okay, because you're erasing them. And I'm trying to be logical. I'm like, okay, he's only 10. How do you teach a child about Sally Hemings, who Sally Hemings was, and the other victims of slavery that he produced. How do you explain that? And so then, anyway, my sister happened to be coming through, and I was kind of like, she saw I was kind of perplexed or whatnot, and I'm going to say I was even upset. And she was like, man, why you acting like that? Why you upset about that? You always talking about this, that, and the other. And I'm like, wait a minute. This is important. This is important. This child, this is why little white kids go around indoctrinated with white supremacy, with these myths about these so-called great white people and what have you. And I'm like, it's supposed to be Black History Month. They couldn't find nothing about Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth. I mean, just anybody. I mean, even if you want to go local here in North Carolina, you know, like there's no Black people made no contributions to society. And I feel like even Black History Month, it ain't really for us. You should be teaching your own self and your own children about history, period. Because Black history is American history. And I feel, and I just, man, I was just so upset. And then the next day was on George Washington. And I was like, so how is 10 years old too young to have that conversation with about racism in that context? I'm kind of perplexed about that. How do I explain to him in an appropriate manner that Thomas Jefferson was a sick, sadistic rapist who bought his wife's half-sister, also victim of slavery, her half-sister, and then, you know, he married a woman and then, you know, holding her half-sister as a sexual concubine, basically. And I'm just at a loss. I don't know if he's mature enough to handle that conversation, and maybe I might need to wait a couple of years, but definitely, you know, I taught my own children about Black history, you know, as it relates to American history and racism, maybe not that early. So I'm just kind of perplexed, but I wanted to share that because it was very frustrating. And I'm contemplating on whether I should write a letter to the school board or participate in one of their virtual conferences and make my concerns known. I don't know how much good it's gonna do, but, you know, at least I'll be making my feelings known to the people in charge. Thanks for taking my call.
Founder of the Black Talk Radio Network, Mr. Scotty Reed, and a attempted grandfather, attempted father, you're perplexed. I don't have grandchildren or children. So, and that's such a young, at like 10, like, man, and that also is another, even though this is his grandchild, so it's not like we're talking about, you know, some child in the neighborhood or something, but I mean, that's not your child. Like, I always have a slight pause, right, when people, because people have said, like, it's a little different. Like, if it's your child, you can just, you know, bam, this is what it is. You can tell them what it is, but I mean, it's not your child. Like you said, the mom comes up like, what are you doing? Why are you always yelling, always making things about race and all that like that? Woo, perplex is a great word to describe it. I guess in terms of, or at least my, and it's the same thing, I don't have children, not an expert on this either. We did have justice on the cows at 10. I am of the opinion, I think that 10-year-olds' brain computers, they do work. We certainly have to, you know, we pick our vocabulary, right? We put it on their level. I think by 10, I think most children have had some graspings about incorrect touching and other people's boundaries about touching them, what's correct touching, what's incorrect touching. I think most folks by 10 have got that, some knowledge, some understanding of what's incorrect touching and mistreating someone. I think that can be explained. We talk about Thomas Jefferson's child rape of Sally Hemings. I think that can be explained because there's it, that's already explained. Or I hope it is. I hope people have explained, like, to 10-year-olds, like Jerry Sandusky and the Boy Scouts, like, this is a widespread problem. Like, you have to be mindful of that. So I think that can be explained without the graphic nature and it being, you know, something that's really lewd, but where they understand that this person's, because that's all we're talking about really is mistreatment. You know, it's the same thing if we were talking about bullying or name calling, we're just talking about mistreatment. I think they can grasp that and the incorrectness of it, like, because they're young. So they, I mean, it might, this would be like someone your age, this type of thing happening to you, being bought and sold, like you said. So, yeah, I think they can grasp it. I think we have lots of young black scholars, young black geniuses. They can understand a lot about what is happening. They see, they already understand. They're watching television and they're seeing what's happening and all the rest of it. They understand a lot. I think it's just about putting it on a level that they get and just being honest and encourage. You know, they can ask questions if they don't understand. I think most children, if that hasn't been extinguished by the racist educators, they ask questions. You know, you have a relationship with, you said you and your wife, your partner, you all are taking care of your child every day. So, I mean, you have a relationship with your grandchild.
Mom.
I'm sorry. There it is. I'm sorry. You and the great grandmother. My goodness. Yeah. That child has got a relationship with you all. So, I mean, yeah, I'm sure he will ask questions if he doesn't understand. You know, give it, I don't understand this, explain that, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you can have material to support what you're saying. Like, yeah, I think they, now the mom not, a, you know, sounded like she maybe not is on board with this. That is, you know.
Not the mom, the great aunt.
The great aunt.
My sister.
Oh, your sister.
The grand aunt, however you call that.
I got it.
Yes, my sister.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is very common. That is unfortunate, but that's very common to have lots of folks, lots of victims, I'll say, black people who have that sort of opinion that you shouldn't, you know, shouldn't be focused on all that and shouldn't be talking to them about all that. And you certainly shouldn't be talking to young children. That is very, very common. I do not agree with that perspective. I think we should just be honest the same way that we are honest about the danger of fire, the danger of water. Be honest about the danger of racism. I think one of our callers said, if you want them to know it, don't rely on osmosis. Have to be direct about racism. So that's what I think. I think what you sounding like you want to do and have been doing, I think that's the correct procedure. I guess I would just say with the school component, why not just talk about the Wilmington massacre? I mean, y'all have so many things in North Carolina that you could talk about for Black History Month. Like, what, you could watch the Wilmington 10 documentary, like Wilmington on Fire, I'm sorry, the Wilmington 10, like it's endless things that you all could talk about for North Carolina and Black History Month. Why George Washington and Thomas Jefferson? And particularly if it's not going to be to put them in context as child rapists and terrorists, if it's not going to be in correct context, like, come on, we could have picked it. Cam Newton would have been a better choice. Like, figures in North Carolina history for Black History Month. We'll do Cam Newton. Like, that, in my opinion, would have been a better choice. But that's what I said about, see, that's what you can expect. That's what they're going to do for Black History Month at the school. So you can do them. I mean, Black, it's going to be March Monday, I think. So, but dang, Mr. Reed, you've raised some excellent points. And we'll bring that up for Black History Month 2022. And we might have, you know, COVID-25 by then. So they'll have forgot about it and moved on. I don't know. I think you probably have a lot of other things you could do with your time. You could be with your family, with your mom, with your grandchild. Like, I don't think they'll do the right thing. I think they'll do the same thing that they did to the mom who wrote in. Just, oh, man, I didn't realize that. We didn't know they were doing George Washington for. That's what I think they'll do. They'll just give you some nonsense and waste more of your time. And you'll still be perplexed. Let's see. If we have parents, now that we've had two in a row, who are dealing with basically the same Black History Month, all of that Black History Month. If we have any parents who have any thoughts about all of this, what you would do, would you, if you were Mr. Reed, would you call or write a, he said either write a letter or participate in like the Zoom conference type thing. Would you do that or would you continue being honest with your child about all of this 10-year-old? Or would you say, hey, I'll wait, his mom or great aunt is seeming like she's not on board with all of this. There's some resistance. So maybe I'll wait, let them get a little bit older and then we can talk about all this. So would you push forward and share now? The mom who wrote in about her child in school, push forward for Black History Month, try to make them do something or get the child out of the school. That's my vote. If we have parents, feel free. We'll get some of the other folks who dialed in.
Might be heard.
Mo in Dallas, attempted parent, I believe.
Yes, sir, I am an attempted parent. In response to Mr. Reed and his Black history issue, I personally know several educators, and there's a pattern or there's a window in which the education system operates in when it comes to Black History Month, when it comes to Black figures, I've noticed. And it's usually from Martin Luther King to Barack Obama. And pretty much anybody in that window, you know, the first Black this or the first Black whatever, and there's not really much room for growth. I guess it's a select few Black individuals that the education system even draws on, at least in Texas. I'll say that. I don't know nationwide. And when it comes to educating your grandson, what I would recommend is that you come up with I would recommend that you sit down and you develop a vocabulary list that you wanted to, that you would like to go over with your grandson, like just over particular words like discrimination, especially if you know what you're going to be talking about, words like discrimination, rape, subjugation, racism, you know, like even words they use, microaggression, things like that, and take it to his mother. And let her know, hey, I would like to talk to him about this or these things, and see if she's okay with that. And if she says yes, go for it. And I know with my son, he was 10, and I had to talk to him about racism and him being discriminated against in certain ways because he thought it was just him. And the thing is, the 10-year-old mind is very delicate, but it is also very advanced. Like, they have tablets. They have all of this access to the internet. So I would rather someone who cares about them, cares about any child, you know, that has access to the internet, inform them about what they may experience it before they discover it on their own so that they can understand exactly it is what they're looking at. You said you wanted to know if you wanted recommendations, if you should like write a letter or participate. I recommend participation. If you feel you must, if you just can't focus on your grandchild, if it really bothers you, I recommend participation. But I would say have a list of things that you'd like to ask and not deviate from that list to see. And they don't have to be like hardball questions, just things that these people should be able to answer using logic. Because if you enter a meeting like that, like guns blazing, excuse the metaphor, but they might ostracize you in some capacity, you know, and then in turn, they might, you know, you might put a target or make your grandchild more of a target when it comes to the educational system. You know, he has this militarized person at home, so we're going to make sure to get him. That's what I recommend there. When it comes to the gifted programs and such, I myself actually had to campaign for myself to be in the gifted program when I was in school. That was a feat in itself because they wanted to coin me dyslexic and I was advanced. It was a battle. Like, I had to have my parents come. I had to get tested. Like, I really had to qualify. I had test scores or whatever, but I don't know. Like, they really, really, really would prefer to not give a gifted child or give Black children gifted status. There are certain amenities that come with that. And I don't understand. I think the school gets paid more if the children have learning disabilities. I think that's what happens in public schools. Let's see here. Workplace. I picked up a second job and decided to quit on Martin Luther King Day. I didn't quit that day, but it was interesting how I quit. I came in, and I was actually yelled at in a public setting by my supervisor, for a mistake that wasn't my own. And I tried to make it clear that it wasn't my own, but, you know, I didn't want to perceive to be arguing with a superior. Later that day, a white male, on Martin Luther King Day, by the way, and this is a warehouse setting, had a wreck with a forklift and broke a forklift in half, basically knocked the forks off of a forklift. And I saw this same supervisor, like, with his hand on his shoulder, took him in private. The guy fled the scene of the accident. We just had a meeting about, if you have an accident, don't move. He ran away from the accident, drove away or whatever, left the other coworker there with his damaged equipment. And the supervisor just, you know, they were kind of whispering and coddling. And I could kind of hear, like, hey, man, I'm just trying to get this together. I don't want anything. And I was like, you just yelled at me 2 hours ago for something I didn't do. Then and there, I decided I was quitting. I think I quit the next week. Hair in the workplace. I've been growing my hair. I've been called a rapper, militant. Like, it's just really, like, I do my best to wear a hat now. People have reached to grab my hair, and I had to really explain to them, like, I have a no-touching rule in general, but I had to explain to the lady that did, like, how would you feel if you just got your hair done the way you'd like it, and I put my hands in your head? I really had to bring it down to a human level, and it's really difficult to not seem mean when you're trying to be clear. With that being said, I've been accused of being difficult in the workplace because it is hard to reword my statements. So I stayed in the question lane when I was notified of that. And I was like, so my issue is that I am too clear. and then the coworker was like, well, not like that, but kind of like that. And I was like, I don't understand. Like, it was just very strange. Also, last point, in the workplace, the greetings or the black sense, partner, ghetto colloquialisms. I don't respond to, well, I don't use or respond to statements if I can help it, such as what's up, what it do, what's good, what's happening. I try my best not to. I usually greet people with good morning, hello, good evening, good night. And I've noticed more people that are more white and non-white, non-black people using phrases like this. And it's very, and using them towards me. They don't greet each other like that. This is why I have a sort of a visceral response to these, or that's just why they trigger me, because it's not a common thing. That's all I have for now. Me and my life. Thank you.
Not a common thing. That has been my conclusion as well. I'm past the point where that's my observation. That's my conclusion. It's very specific and very deliberate. When the Negroes come around, then, as she said in the report, now it's time for gangsta in the house. What it do? All the rest of it. And good morning, Mr. Timpson. Afternoon, Mrs. Johnson. Hope all of you are doing well. 2:40 in the, like, why are we all professional now? And then, now when I come in, it's like we're on a rap video. Like, come on, come on, come on. Let's see, the hair touching. We've had so many of those over the years. The molesting of hair, and I mean That is embarrassing. Like, we are a year into the Rona. There should not be any, like, fondling, groping, let me run my hand. I mean, come on. Like, it would be, can you imagine a black person? I just want to come and run my hands through your blonde hair. Bill Cosby, Al Sharpton, doing this in a work environment. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Come on. Come on. Let's all watch our space. You have to be black self-respect about those boundaries. Make it clear. Do not touch. Thank you. We are in a professional environment. Let's behave professionally. Thank you. And I mean, like I said, with the Rona, we had people pre-Rona who said, I'm not even doing handshakes. That's what it would be now. No handshakes, no fist bumps, nothing. Man, what a day in the workplace to have a white person say, you are too clear. Be able to even ask that as a question where things, wait a minute, the problem is that I am too, T-O-O, too clear. Well, in a way, yes, but not really. What? Let me write that down. Like, I ask, is the problem that my communication is too clear in the workplace? And your answer was, well, in a way, yes, but not really. Is that what you answer? Like, woo. So is it that you want me to be ambiguous when I communicate in the workplace? Is that what you're saying? That's how I'll get all the raises and promotions, to just go around and talk nonsense and be vague? Follow logic. Follow logic. Yes, I would also, I thought that was a great suggestion from Mr. Reed. If you are going to do the meeting, to have like questions that you want to ask, spectacular, to not go in there with your militaristic hair so they can make all kinds of accusations and then be vindictive against your grandson, which I'm sure they would do. The yelling, we had another one. I just said that happens all the time. They'll come and yell at you. He said they come and yell at you on Dr. King's holiday about a mistake that you didn't even make. All the time, system of whites, but they love it. Like, the getting us to get emotional and respond, like the feeling things at a visceral level. They do a lot of that. Love it. Even can know that you didn't do this. I know darn well you didn't do anything wrong, but I like to yell at the nigger. And it's Dr. King's holiday. That's what we do. I had a dream. What is it? Living the dream. We've heard that one a number of times too, where people are in job where they have jobs where they're company cars or the forklifts and those type of things where there's some sort of vehicular movement, and they have policy and procedure about. I know about that on my job. Man, they have all manner of policy and procedure about driving vehicles and what have you. If you get in an accident, I have worked on a job where I was driving and was in an accident where I was going 0 miles per hour. Let me say it again. I was on the job where they had a company car. I was in an accident where I was going 0 miles per hour. And it was still assumed, the rumor immediately, oh my God, that reckless Negro was out drinking and he ran over the corner and was going 80 miles. And I was stopped when I was hit. It's like, what? 0 miles per hour. But after all of that, they have procedure. You cannot just pedal to the middle and peel out. Like, no. Actually, that's a crime, I believe, if it's a vehicular crash and you peel off. I think that's leaving the scene of an accident. Like, that's, you know, police involvement, I think. But neither here nor there. At minimum, for the workplace, like, you're supposed to stay there. Take pictures. A lot of times that's a report that you might have to fill out. You might have to go to human resources. Depending on the job, that may require a drug test, all kinds of things. depending on what the policy and procedure, not, I'm out of here, peace. Like, whoa, what is going on? And imagine you are a black person in that sort of situation and you just leave. There can be charges from what I'm aware, depending on, like I just said, in some scenarios, it may require a drug test. Like even my scenario in some instances, like I said, I was going zero. It still may come in here. Let's make sure, go ahead, urine test, all of that. And they may have had the power to do that. It just, you know, in this instance, it was pretty obvious that the other person was at fault. So even though it's still the initial rumors were, oh, my God, he was going 100 miles an hour and ran someone off the road. And then, oh, all right. Well, he could have been going 100 miles an hour and ran someone off the road. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, much obliged, Mo and Dallas. If you have either suggestions, if we have attempted parents and you have suggestions for Mr. Reed or our mom who dialed in, feel free. Or if you have your own situation, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter in Florida.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to everyone. Greetings, Mr. Reed. I'm not a grandparent, and I haven't the closest that I've had as far as an experience was my older sister wanted me to speak to my nephew and spend some time. She actually sent him to South Florida from Georgia because he assisted in to a development of a relationship with a white female when they were early teenagers. And my sister and her husband, his father, they dealt with it with the white female and the white female's parents. And basically, I was reinforcement, so to speak. It worked out pretty well because of. He has been married now to a fabulous non-white black female now for at least, I would say, probably 15 years with three children. Once it gets even with your own child, it's kind of complicated, the scenario that Mr. Reed described, and especially gets even more complicated when it goes to other children that you're not directly responsible for, albeit it may be your sister's child or brother's child or your child's child. It still gets complicated. My thoughts would be, though, if you have direct permission from that parent, that doesn't release the complication at all. You at least have the okay from the direct person that's responsible for that child. And as I've heard Mr. Fuller state, and I think Dr. Wilson state, that basically if you talk about correctness and or justice first, then you can apply, then it is applicable that injustice would come along to where it can be, then once it comes up, it can be observed. In other words, I heard a healthy strategy I think it was you, Gus, when you mentioned about just talk about the whole idea, the incorrectness of touching. What's incorrect touching? And I just this is just a scenario, and then perhaps you give some examples of some famous examples, even of those people who have did some incorrect touching, like a Thomas Jefferson or a George Washington, you know, as examples, as far as they're concerned. But it is a complicated, it can be a very complicated situation, but it's going to be that way anyway when dealing with children. Now, this thing called Black History Month in itself, white people know that we get excited of such events. That's why they create these things. Because they know we would get excited over it, but based on counter-racist logic, it should be something that we should be involved with at some fashion on a daily basis or as often as we could, no matter what month of the year it is. So if it comes down to something like a February, it would be business as usual on what you share with each other, what you share with a child, and when they go to school, with the ridiculous things that most if not all of us know that would take place during that month, that with maybe some other children it may kind of like throw them off, and also the parents, but the particular child that it's always studying and learning something as a practice, it wouldn't discombobulate the consistency with that person and the group of people that affect that young person. And so that's definitely if needed is to I was thinking about also earlier when you started and you was talking about the reporters and how black reporters were able to get on some of these mainstream, quote unquote, mainstream programs was through the incidents that were taking place in the mid to late 60s. And I thought about the example of Mr. Louis Lomax, because at that time, the Nation of Islam would not allow the white reporters to necessarily document and speak directly with certain officials within the Nation of Islam. And Louis Lomax was accepted to do so with Elijah Muhammad and Minister Malcolm X. And in turn, we know I'm thinking of what's the black male who wrote the autobiography of Malcolm X. He was a reporter for the Digest. I forgot the name of that Digest. And he eventually, as we know, wrote the book, the autobiography of Malcolm X. And that's basically how they benefited from that particular point in time during that time. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Agree with that assessment about doing things individually, things that you do already. I think a lot of folks were saying that seems logical system of white supremacy to take the reins yourself with information that you share, and like you all do with the DCS program, retired firefighter and Mr. Clark, that they've talked about for some years now on the program. Like, that is, I think, the best way to go in terms of investing time and energy, for sure. The number again, 720.
There's limits.
Let me get the number out again. 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. press *61 if you would like to participate. Were you going to add something?
Yeah, yes, sir. Excuse me for interrupting you, but you just reminded me because I was going to briefly speak on that also because I am in a position to whereas I have direct contact with other people's children, and there's limits with that. That there's a caution. There's cautions that we take, even with that quote unquote mentorship program. In talking with the children that get dropped off to us for several reasons, from the standpoint of working towards avoiding from parents complaining, well, you're teaching our children about racism and white supremacy. I didn't drop him off for that, you know. Well, I don't think nobody would be surprised about some of the things that could come up, that sort of thing. And some things have came up, you know, over the course of time, but of that nature, and from the standpoint as that I've heard some people speak today is that you want to stay within their level of understanding. And I agree with you, Gus, also, a 10-year-old could pick up and develop an understanding for these things. That is not too early for someone to have an understanding of racism, white supremacy. And Justice really helped me out just by witnessing her back during that time when she was on the program on a consistent basis. That, yes, children can learn and have an understanding of these things. So it's you know quite important that also you keep it in the lane. And but that's just about with anybody. It can be somebody 25 or 30 years old that you can't say some of the same things to that person that you can say to, let's say, a Gus T. Renegade. You know. You may have to break it down to it's just a point of understanding of the person that you are relating to. And you go from there. The best thing to do is with some people is to wait for them to. I think I heard Dr. Welsing say when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Hi, can I be heard?
Our Bay Area mom? Yes, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. Excuse the delay. Okay, Mr. Reed, grandchildren. I don't have grandchildren. I was thinking that my son didn't participate. I couldn't think of anything with Black History Month. With the children that I have, but my daughter, she went to like a Muslim school, so she got a lot of, she was very white identified as a child, a younger child, probably why she made it to the Muslim school. But so she got a lot of Black history without my input because I was young with that one. But my son, I do remember just listening in that he played Martin Luther King Jr. in elementary school. And whatever his birthday, middle of January, February, it was something like that. So elementary school, and he was selected to play this character. So, casual listener. And I pulled up the archives of the bus boycott. And it was audio. And I went, you know, deep. So it was, you know, far back, not just a little holding hands. I went to the actual people boycotting, and I had him practice from those skits versus the normal Martin Luther King information that they have for the children. And that's all I can remember with that. And he was, third, fourth grade. I can't remember how old that is right now. And just as far as information, me, if I were a grandparent, I have no filter. And the children already know, so it's whatever I say. That's just me, especially if I have access to these children. Now, if they're way or wherever you are with whoever you procreating them with, that's fine. But if they're in my zone, it's whatever I say. And that's just me. You may not want to listen to me, but that's whatever I say with both of them, period. And my son came up with the cows, so he didn't have to listen to every program, but he came up with the show, so it was great for me with him. Even at 9, he read the compensatory code to counteracting racism, and then I made him call Mr. Fuller to tell him what he thought about the book. So he was 9. So it's all on what you do, but just me as a grandparent, you're not going to tell me anything, and they're around me, especially if I'm not doing anything destructive. And that's just me. You could do it how you like, but that's just how I would do it. And just real quick, workplace racism. I went to work yesterday. Black family. I'm the one. I do school with the little boy, so I can't do my actual job. So that's what's going on, probably until Friday, because I picked up the extra day. So I'm gonna. It's going to get rougher for him and the mom. So I walk in the door, I come in through the garage, black mom, hear the baby crying, or the little boy crying, he's whining, he's not crying, he's whining. So I come in with her husband and her husband's friend through the garage, because they said, no, come in through the garage, because we all came in at the same time. So I came in through the garage, I didn't think it would be a problem, so I walk in. So she's like, you know, The look was as if we all came in together from where the outing was. That was the look. So I don't get a hello or anything. And he's following her around, so she's just clearly agitated, not speaking, but the other sister is speaking and talking. Hi, how was this? How was that? Because I hadn't seen her in some days. And the mom never saying anything. She's just got this attitude. So it's fine. I don't know for what. He asked her what was wrong, and when we walked in, and she's like, I was just changing so-and-so, changing the 4-year-old. So he's, what? I was changing such-and-such. So he was a little whiny, but not whiny enough, I'm sure, to have an attitude, because this is the same 4-year-old you've been changing for 4 years. So she never spoke. She's not talking. No big deal. Then she decides to tell me. Because keep in mind, school is almost school time. It's always almost school. So I just let him be free to be, because there's nothing I can do. I can't do my job because he's not interested. Because he just came from AM school, and then there's PM school. So I take him for a walk, me and his aunt. We go for a walk just to do something. And she's talking, whatever, probably what they don't want her walking with me for, but just to get the little boy out the house. So we come back, so it's almost time for school. So you want to eat? And so I wish the parents would prepare better food. So he eats a fry. Not, you know, you're not getting no junk. you can't handle it because his normal routine is cinnamon, toast crunch, dry, juice, lots of juice, accessible juice. It's not even real juice. It's Minute Maid-like juice. No water. He used to have binge on Oreo cookies. Just everything is accessible. Graham, anything he wants is just available. What? Oh, you want this? He doesn't have to request or anything. So much for what I do. So it's just, oh, no, he made an attempt. He sent in. So he can get it. So this is, yeah. So Doritos, that's a hit. Yeah. And so that has to be available right at lunch. So on that lunch, school. So school session starts. He has to have some kind of juice, or maybe even milk, or some either whatever he wants, cinnamon toast, whatever, or Doritos, and has to be right there. And so this is what he's chilling on. I don't know if that's metaphor, but this is what he's eating as he's relaxing while he's supposed to be working. So there's no, you have to wait for him. And school will be over by the time he finishes eating and drinking. I'm drinking now, and you know that. So the mom is, okay, you're not getting no junk, which is the junk is Doritos. You can have junk McDonald's, French fries. So no, nothing is at an appropriate time. School starts. Now the teacher wants to talk to me. She already requested to talk to me on Wednesday. She wants to talk to me, the teacher. I don't work there, but sure, you can talk to me. So his session was ended early for class so I could talk to the teacher. So the teacher wanted Mrs. Bucket with all his stuff. He's never done homework now. Come to find out, he's never done any homework. The work he does is the work we do. He's had stuff he's supposed to turn in for months. He's never turned it in. There's a folder. Everything is together, supposedly. It's just lots of grocery bags of stuff that she gets from the school. I'm the one when school shifts in time is like, oh, do you have the such and such? Huh? It came in the packet. Oh, I guess it's in a weekly packet to her. Maybe she picks it up, however it comes. So now I'm scrambling through bags looking for whatever, and then it's, you know, time's ticking. So I'm cleaning out everything because just to, well, okay, so what is this? What is this? Oh, this is for this. This is for my, oh, that was supposed to be done months ago. This, so I'm separating all this stuff. Now, mind you, everything is disarray all the time, and I have to put it together. So now I'm really putting this together because we're actually going through it piece by piece, the head teacher and I. And she's like, well, I don't understand. You know, I feel like, oh, excuse me, I'm trying to, you know, keep up. And she said, well, it's not even your job. So I just appreciate you doing that because in real life, this mother's supposed to have the stuff together. So when I conclude the conversation with the lady, only God knows who's watching the little boy. Well, I'm not because I'm doing this. He's free to be. She's at the computer. Nobody's moving around to watch this child. She said, oh, I'm so glad you guys got to that because that's been bothering me. It's just, I'm going to get that together. I said, you are funny. And then she just, no, because I've been meaning to get that together. I was like, well, it's together now. And all this over here is for you to do. Oh, I want to keep stuff like that. Yeah, I want to keep stuff like that. You know, I like stuff like that. Is that why it's blank for you to do it in your spare time? So I didn't say that, but that's what I'm thinking. So I'll let you know on Friday how Friday goes with the newer schedule with him and the supervisor. And I'll mute my line. And thank you for taking my call.
Much obliged, Bay Area mom. White people do not care about children. I've said that for some time. Drink more water. I said that this morning. I taught yoga. Was awesome. All black people. Lots of fun. But I told them, drink more water. So important for health, development, young brains, young bodies, growing, doing all that learning, and then to just have straight poison and a schedule of daily poison, to do Oreos and Doritos and Cinnamon Toast Crunch, like no cereal, fresh fruits, vegetables, none of that. Just nonsense. Eat poison, bad food, and, you know, that's supposed to help you study, concentrate, get through your work, do what you're going to do through the course of your day, and setting you up for a lifetime of bad eating habits that are just going to poison you and your system, probably lead to a lot of unnecessary medical problems. Can perhaps even remove the probably will lead to medical problems if you keep, you know, eating all that Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Oreo cookies. I used to eat a lot of Doritos, man. I remember she told us before, our Bay Area mom having her offspring read the code book, call Mr. Fuller, listen to The Cows, like Justice, brilliant at her age, brilliant now, but I mean, you know, she's so-called adult now, but at 10, awesome. We get her questions together and study and go online and research, you know, who the guest is going to be. But I don't want anybody to think like, oh, my God, she is one in a billion. No one else could do that. Wrong. It's just a matter of the word she used. He would consistently, she said, her offspring, he would consistently listen to The Cows. She regularly encouraged reading. She said she just talked, being honest with her offspring about things that are happening. All of that can serve you very well, in my view. But the consistency, I think that's so huge. Just being consistent with what you present, what you talk about, that makes a huge impact. And I think logic, because logic is so rare in the system of white supremacy, to be able to consistently present logic on a subject matter, that has an impact. Generally, not always, but generally speaking, just being able to consistently be logical about things, that can be very helpful. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Yes, can I give another scenario if no one else is going to speak?
Mo in Dallas. Yes, sir.
Oh, thank you. This goes back to kids and kind of preparing them for the world before they experience things. I'm familiar with this lady, a coworker of mine, who had a 10-year-old boy, and he goes to a school where he is one of the few non-white black children that are in attendance, and he is a well-kept child, and so much so that the little girls there find him attractive, and he's not, you know, sensual in any way. He's just a little boy doing what little boys do. So there's a little girl that pushed him, white girl that pushed him, and he pushed her back, and he happened to push her in her chest area, and the school wanted to bring him up on sexual assault charges. She had no chest, you know, she had no breasts or anything for him to fondle, and she, you know, like I said, he was pushing her back, you know, because they were playing, and I guess adults understand, you know, kids, when they like each other, they play. And her mom had to, like, explain to him what sexual assault is because of that, you know. And she was gung-ho about, you know, you're a black boy, you can't do whatever. Like, so I'm certain if Mr. Reed's grandchild understands that before he has to know it, you know, before he's subject to criminal charges or something like that for a misunderstanding, I hope that he could navigate his young life that much better. That scenario was just in my head, and maybe sexual assault could go on that list of words that he may develop. Thank you. I'm getting my line.
much obliged. Attempted parent, Mo in Dallas. Parenting is hard. Good suggestions for sharing information. The number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate.
Hi, Gus.
Be in Toronto. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, greetings to you, callers and listeners. It's interesting that this came up tonight regarding the lack of referrals from teachers to have Black children into more gifted programs, as one identified, and also of the Black History Month. 'Cause ironically enough, last Saturday, I was speaking to a group of Black parents about this very thing, about special education. And special education isn't only referring to children who are identified as having a learning disability or conduct behavior, high-risk behavior, or even developmental disabilities. But within special education, it also includes gifted students as well, because the curriculum will need to be more accommodating to their needs and their intellectual level as well. So I was explaining to parents about the ways about going and getting the assessment for their child or children in order to enter into the programs, how to get a second opinion for the assessment, as well as to how to challenge the IEP, otherwise known as the Individual Education Plan, if there's any misinformation and whatnot. So what I would highly recommend for parents to do is to, if their child is identified in either of the streams of a gifted program or developmental disabilities, learning disabilities, and high risk, to definitely review the IEPs. If there's any questions, definitely bring it up at the case conferences, because parents can request for a case conference. If they find that coordinating it is too much, there are organizations that will provide them with the service planning coordinator who will be able, or a similar type of role, who will also assist parents with the advocacy component. So that the parent doesn't have all the burden, because it can be quite overwhelming. And especially in those case conferences, parents can really feel like they're backed into a corner, because they have all the school staff surrounding them, it can be quite intimidating. So having advocacy is key. In terms of Black History Month, when I was younger, I remember there were Black Heritage classes in school. There was an Italian Heritage class, and this was in public school. And then when I transferred into Catholic school, they had a similar. So there was an Italian Heritage, Portuguese Heritage, Black Heritage, Spanish Heritage. And there would be a certain point in the day in which the children would go into the heritage classes of their choice and learn about the culture. I'm not quite sure if they have those heritage classes in existence now, because my son is in post-secondary. But if they still have them in existence, but they do not have the Black Heritage class, I would highly recommend to advocate for funding to have the Black Heritage class within the school. What's going to be key is finding a teacher or educator who will be able to do that class as well. If there isn't a teacher willing to do so, a great question to ask is, would a parent be able to fill in that space and still get paid for doing the class, for the Black Heritage class, if that is possible? So then at least it ensures that there is meaningful education around Black history. If that isn't possible and the school is identified as white supremacist, which most of the schools are, or all the schools are, actually. But if this one is to the point where the teacher's racist, the principal's racist, the administration, then it is best to consider an alternative. And there are alternative schools out there to look into and see how they are run, because I had to take my son out of Catholic school when he was younger and put him into an alternative school where I had more control over his learning and more input as to how his curriculum would be. And once he finished the alternative elementary school, he was able to transition quite effortlessly into high school. And in fact, was given an advanced, offered to go into an advanced grade because of what he's learned through alternative schooling. So definitely another consideration there. The other thing that I wanted to mention is in regards to the T4, there was a few podcasts ago where I discussed about when I was on a plantation and there was a race soldier who was a youth that threw the oak chair at me and causing to hurt my finger. So that plantation, when I had left, I was fighting for the pandemic pay, because they only wanted to give the edibles, the edible fruits. So it was quite interesting because I received the T4 today, which is the form to do the taxes. And I noticed something that was quite peculiar. There's new boxes on the T4, the Ontario T4. It would be for Canadian T4 because it's for the income tax roll of Canada, but it's box 57, 58, and 59, and those boxes are for the pandemic pay within the time ranges. And what I noticed is that in box 57, they had $5,000. Box 58, they had $3,870. And box 59, they had $1,224. And it's these boxes are under what's known as other employment pay. And I didn't receive any of this. Like the total comes up to about $10,070 and change. I didn't receive any of that pay. the most that I had received was a check for $567.80 from them. So I found it quite interesting with this former plantation that they're claiming that they've paid me over $10,000 and I haven't received anywhere near that. So I'm in the process of contacting Revenue Canada to see how I can proceed with this and how this can be further investigated, because I question whether the former plantation is trying to use my name as a means for them to get reimbursement for a pandemic pay that they never paid me for in that amount, I highly suspect that there's some kind of fraud going on with that. So I'm definitely going to be contacting Revenue Canada to see how I can proceed with this. I've already printed out my statements for the year 2020 to show exactly how much was placed into the account, because it was through direct deposit until I left, resigned. And then they gave two checks, but it was, again, nowhere near the over $10,000 that they're claiming. So I would highly recommend for essential workers, when you're looking on your T4, look in boxes 57, 58, and 59, and ensure that the pandemic pay that they've put down there that they're claiming is the amount that you've received. If not, definitely contact the Premier's office. That's what I did. To alert them, and also to contact Revenue Canada to find out how to proceed on this as well. And thanks, that's all I have to share. I leave the line.
Wow, that is seems more substantial than just like wage theft. Like, wow. Man, do your diligence in checking. Like, imagine that. Like, come on. Document and really, like, investigate, because I'm sure that's not. In fact, they've said, she's in Toronto, but they've said consistently that Black people have had a more difficult time getting access to some of the COVID relief funding. They were talking about this in the U.S., not in the Canada. Maybe they should have just said in the whole world. So I'm not surprised to hear that at all. And in fact, that's in the archives where B was talking about all of the effort she had to invest into just trying to get this $500, much less thousands of dollars that they are alleging that they paid to her. But document, keep all of your records. These sort of like major financial shenanigans are very common in the system of white supremacy anywhere in the world. Much obliged for the advice for attempted parents as well. I remember she had just talked about going to do her project, sharing information with parents and advocating for your children. Those white women, mostly white women, but white people in general, do not advocate. Look out for resources for Black children. You have to do a lot of work if you're going to have your child in the public school system. Lots of work to fight off the constant attacks. Other folks, if we've missed you totally, if you have a hand up, if you have comments here to share, proceed.
Have you heard?
Our caller in Florida? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I have some reports I would like to share. And it's interesting. I have thought about the aspect of where the issue of sexual harassment has come up in some of the reports in the past. And given that I work in a workplace dominant with white women, and, you know, that brings about treachery, deception, trickery, being conniving, racism, all of those things combined. I'm noticing that this week it looks like they've had another little chat meeting. It seems like where it's like they have one specifically for me. That's just an assumption. Like, I know I'm pretty popular on the chats, because it seems like whenever I, like, do my rounds, they know the certain times that I go to the different departments throughout my job, throughout the day. So sometimes the mood is, oh, I have a good weekend, or they're saying things that they usually don't say, and it's out of character. So, you know, I make sure that I document the different tones that's taken against me. And sometimes they'll even speak to me as though I am a child, you know. So, because some of these females, you know, they're so-called mothers, I guess. And I noticed that. I say, like, dang, like the way she uttered that sentence, the way it was said, you know, I think to myself, and I, you know, I jot it down on the phone. You know, so it's different things like that that I take notice of. I wanted to start out with that. And second one is where I mentioned where it was this situation where this white man, right, and he came in and he was flirting with my supervisor, a white woman. And it looked like she was taking a liking to it. But yet she, like I said before, she said just somebody just looking at her was, she labeled it as creepy. So creepy is usually associated with something dark. Make somebody afraid of something dark, creepy. So I can only assume that it was a particular black male. Okay. And then I say that because, you know, unfortunately I had to, in a way confront this victim because he was, I felt like he was trying to degrade me to make a sexual impression on females, particularly the black females. So he would try to down me in order to look attractive to black females. And he did this for, you know, for years, for a while. So I had to, you know, I wanted to report that I said this. And the response I got from the white woman wasn't like the response that I got when I reported that this white man said that I couldn't bring a gun in. Hey, you can't bring this gun in here now. So I like when I'm able to mention the comparisons to white people. They get very nervous and they turn red face. My next, I wanted to talk about, it was a post of one of the MAGA white females. And I say that metaphor, like, because they talk about supporting Trump. So, like, it's a reason, you know, why I'm saying that. Republican, so-called Republican, whatever. She put up this image. It's a picture of a guy in like a kitchen in a restaurant, right? So the punch is, oh, well, you better not tell this person any secrets. And there's a punchline where it goes, oh, well, he or she spilled the beans. So it's a whole bunch of spilled beans in a pan sitting on the ground. So beans all over the place. So people who clicked to like the post, people, at least three people, gang members, I use a metaphor, gang members, that's in the click. So I'm like, see, so that's going back to the chat again, unjust networking. So I say, let me go ahead and screenshot that one. And I have two more. The term, this white woman, another member, she, well, it was reported to me by a black female that she does not like taking the elevator. White woman, who I had to confront about the hearts, she says to the black female, oh, hey, mama, M-A-M-A, right? Mama. So do you want to ride on the elevator? I'll save you a spot. And she's like, oh, no, you can go ahead. And so she refuses to get on the elevator. And a white woman comes up behind her to get onto the elevator. And the victim hears this white woman say, oh, I was trying to be nice. So we was talking about that, like, what's meant by trying? What is, you know, what spawned that? Like, where did that come from? Right? So that's, once again, them having these confidential conversations on which black people they're going to try to experiment with. All right? And my last one is, there was a conversation, once again, about a victim, I think, was a victim of racism before he got up to the courthouse. Now, these are people looking up juvenile records, pretty serious stuff. See? So, it's after 4:30. The drive-thru closes at 4:30, so you can't get nothing through the window. So this guy wanted a case history, a background printout, you know, so that's $2.15 per page, you know, every additional page. And, you know, she gets the guy off the phone and she says to the officers, the bailiffs up front, that we have a person coming up to get a name search history. So they're talking about this guy. And I hear this this white woman, all right, she says, well, they might end up profiling them anyways, right? So that's just like, I'm thinking that's anti-black. I hadn't seen this person now, but I could just tell because I've been around them so many years that they're talking about somebody black. So they can already pull up the reports. And it's got the racial classification. And just on that basis, I could tell by the language they're using. It's just my, you know, my suspicion of them. They're talking about a black male. So I walk to the other side. I say, let me see how this person looks. So it's a black guy at the counter, about to turn 21 years old, right? So they're, you know, her and the other gang member up there at the computer, they're helping this person. But there was, you know, there was practicing racism before he got there, right? So they help the guy out. And, you know, he goes on his way. And the other white woman says, wow, you know, he was really respectful and nice. You know, if you saw him somewhere, you wouldn't really think that. Or something racist, she said. So I just stood right there. And just, you know, because I wanted to see what the reaction would be. So, you know, they said what they said. So this is coming to the end of the day. So, you know, I made sure I jot that one down. And I just went on my way. I clocked out and I left. And other than that, that's the only thing I have to share right now. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Much obliged. Our caller in Florida does not get any better than tacky, man. Let's see. We got creepy. It generally is something, somebody dark compared is creepy. Let's see. The social media postings. I think we talked about that before, just being able to go and check out what people are writing, if they have a publicly shared page, so you can investigate. Might be something to store, particularly if you have like a gang or unit in your workplace and they all are homies and are tagging each other on posts and liking each other's posts, doing some unjust networking probably. Might be something worthy of a screenshot or three. Talk about the elevator insult. Now, I thought he said that it was kind of known that this black female didn't do the elevator. I know I've worked with some people like that. Like, if it's an elevator in the building, they just don't take it. Like, they're all about exercise. Like, I've worked with some people who are about that. I've worked with some people where they're just claustrophobic. They don't like being in small spaces. Lots of reasons where I've known people where they just work with some people. They don't trust the elevator. Might be, you know, rinky dink or what have you. So lots of reasons where I've seen folks and they have a rep. Like, you know, Bill does not ride the elevator. Helen doesn't take the elevator. Sounded like it was known. And she says, oh, I saved the. And we got another one. And it's at least the third one this program. They didn't say, oh, I saved the elevator for you, Miss Pitts. I saved the elevator for you, Helen. No, it was, hey, mama, do you want to ride? Like, are you trying to holler at somebody out on the street? Like, what is, again, we're back at the rap video. That's the rap video lingo, right? You ride by, cruising by. Nah, I'm good. And then, no thank you. And she didn't curse at her. What are you talking about? I don't ride. You know how to ride. She didn't do all that. No thank you. Trying to be nice to you. What? What? All I said was I'm good. All you have to do is press the button. You got another little pal who wants to get on and go to your... Trying to be nice to you. That is nice, and that would for sure be one. Write that down. Trying to be... No thank you. Trying to be nice to you. That is, and I've,
the unidentified subject is white and in his late 20s.
I have experienced that sort of thing before, where a white person in like a workplace setting, or really anywhere, it doesn't have to be workplace, where they, this will be like their attempt to prove that they're not racist. Like, oh, I can hold the door for you. Or it'll be something really trivial too. It's not like they're getting you a raise or anything like that. Like, oh, I can hold the door. Oh, no, thank you. I'm not even trying to be nice. My God, what do these niggers want? Oh, so ungrateful. Like, and then they go off on the elevator talking about that. Like you said, it gave the impression like they had been talking about her or something. Like, she's such a no-count coon and all the rest of it. And then, oh, how you doing? I can hold the door open for you. And then she was like, see there, that's exactly what I said. And then they can go on talking about it. Like, and again, these are the people that we work with. I'm not, you know, it's nothing to go and get angry. And then I'm going to go spike her coffee, or she left her food in the, you know, refrigerator. I'm going to go and do something to it. Just, these are the people that I work with. I'm not confused. I'm not hurt about this. I'm not angry. I'm not expecting them to hold the elevator for me. I know they gossip and talk bad about me. Like, that's the system of white supremacy. But I mean, the pettiness. I was going to say tacky, but I mean the pettiness. Just because, fine, take the steps. More room for us on it. Rona, I thought she's not supposed to be crowding the elevator anyway. Let's see. She said, the profiling, and probably got another example there because it sounded like they were talking about, or they were. They were talking about this fellow who came in just to get his juvenile records or what have you, legal matters together. And they are sitting there talking about, oh, he's probably been profiled. Carjacker, I bet. And he comes in, and I guess he can string a sentence or two together and what have you. And yes, ma'am, thank you for my paperwork. Is, you know, has some manners and goes about it. Wow, can you believe it? He was so nice and well-mannered. I can't believe he'd be raping and carjacking and all the rest of it. I mean, my goodness, he was so calm. Could have fooled me. Just having that in mind, because I think for a lot of people, I know at least for myself, I just wouldn't think in that way before I started studying racism, that you probably have lots of times where white people are doing that sort of thing. White people that you work with, that we work with, that you see on a regular basis, classmates or whatever, Yes, they're sitting around talking about you in exactly that type of way. Potential criminal, mugger, looter. Let's see. And balance all that out with the tackiness. He said the victim, he had to go and say something, a victim of racism, putting him down to make an impression on a female. Like, oh, we go from elevator insults to, and again, I said that before our caller in Florida even spoke. I just said, you do not have homies in the workplace, white or non-white. I just said that. These are not your friends. These are not people that you're coming to kick it with. Just because this person is classified as not white, has some melanin, that doesn't mean anything. We have been totally trashed and conditioned to have contempt and to be in conflict with other elevator insults, even though, you know, it's a white person in that instance. But that's what we've been trained to do. That's what's been modeled for us, to have contempt. He just said last week that the victim came in and said, where's that old, you know, meathead at? Where is he at? Who are you talking about? I just came in to heckle her. Dang. Can we call her by her name? You just came to heckle her and talk bad about her? Really? That's the check-in that we got for the day? And then we come this week. Now we got a black man. Well, I won't say, I don't know if you said black male, but you said victim. Now we got a victim who is over here. He's got to degrade and talk bad about me so that he can try and hook up with this female. Like, what? Incidentally, I say we shouldn't be doing the dating thing in the workplace. That is bad idea for about a billion reasons, too. We talked about that before, like no hooking up on the job. That talk about lack of codification, that right there. That notwithstanding, like, woof, that is a bad day. Well, I mean, really, anytime you have to go and make a report about, you know, misconduct from non-white people, bad day. But I mean, woof. Are we in third grade? That's what. And then you go to report that. I got to go get white people involved to stop them from, you know, all this foolishness. I go to report it. And he said she's totally different conduct. When he came in the last time, when it was a white person, he said, hey, don't bring that gun in here. We don't allow terrorists. He went in to report that one. And it was, oh, God, was it Ned? It was Ned. Jesus, God, I knew it. We'll talk to him. That was how she responded for that one. This one, how did she respond this time when it was another victim?
She said, you know what? I did hear him say something one day that I walked by. That's why I was suspecting she was talking about him looking at her. She said that all she said that, you know, I walked through the area. She didn't say necessarily what area it was. And she just said a person that frequents the area, you know, because they start speaking in them abstractions. And she said that he looked at me up and down, and it was just so creepy. She just kept saying that word. And what gave me the hint was she named the black female that sits in the area that I sit. So this gentleman, black male victim, like you mentioned, the same one that who used to make the non-constructive comments toward me, it sounded like she was talking about him, that same guy. So when I reported that I had to say these things to him, she responded in that way, like, well, you know, I heard him say something one time too, as though she didn't oppose me making that comment. But this guy, this bailiff, that said, well, hey, you can't bring that weapon in here, that gun in here. You know, she was like, was it that white guy? But she did not want to hear it. All right. She did not want to hear it. She was just disgusted that I shared that with her. Like, she didn't want to agree. But when I mentioned it about the black guy, she she wanted to, almost like she wanted to dialogue about that. So jot that one down. And she can't stand when I bring it to her. You know, that's why she was like, oh, well, you know, I just can't have this conversation. And I said, I know you can't because you can't handle it, you know. Almost like a few good men, you can't handle the truth. You know, I know another metaphor, but that's what I was thinking about that scene. So, you know, like that's how our reaction was. She did not want to hear it. When it's a white person, she does not want to hear it. She'll get silent sometimes because I think they had conversations on, well, next time you talk to him, don't try and just put off his claims and everything. Make it seem like you care, that you want to listen to him. So that's just my opinion on it. So, yeah. Hmm.
That the last portion of his response right there, if you, you know, are raising questions, making an effort to be logical in the workplace, it will definitely stand out. And talk about unjust networking. They will network like, oh, man, we need to strategize about what to say, what not to say, what's a better strategy for dealing with them. Like that happens in many, many workplaces. Once they identify like, oh, we got a few trouble niggers, we'll, you know, rendezvous at 700 hours and have a discussion about, you know, the best way to proceed. We'll have some text updates later in the day as well. That is super common once you stick out, as is that sort of response. White people do not mind having to intervene like, oh, there's a problem with the niggers. Oh, yes, we'll handle it. Yes, that is. That's yeah, I've known he does things like that. I've heard him. He's a no count coon. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Doesn't surprise me at all. And then when it's a white person, like, oh, very different response. Like I said, that is, you know, always an awful day when you have to get white people to solve problems. But I mean, united, independent, and we have lots of victims of white supremacy who do not have any sort of codification for the workplace. And all they have been exposed to is mistreat non-white people. That's what it's supposed to do. Not be constructive or helpful. Mistreat, even when it looks like we are, you know, trying to tell a joke or something, we mistreat non-white people, be in conflict, especially with black people. That is encouraged worldwide by racists to keep their system operating. So have to be mindful of that. That has to be a part of your workplace code as well. And we said before, sometimes that may unfortunately have to include going to white people to stop being mistreated by a non-white person. Ugh, absolutely repugnant. Sorry you had to deal with all that, but that is the system that we live in. You just try to do the best you can. Did you try and talk to this fella before you went to the white people? I guess we do try to encourage that, to see if you can, you know, do something on your own before you have to go to white people. Did you try and to get him to stop this behavior before you, you know, had to resolve to go in to talk to a suspected racist?
Yes, sir. At least, about two times. But he's gotten better now. So, you know, we communicate, constructively and everything like that. So we haven't really had any kind of issues like that. But I believe this was back in 2019. And that's why I brought him up, because I'm thinking that's who she was speaking about. So, but for the most part, it's definitely, I think that they try to use that. And like the email where she sent, for example, she was like, oh, well, if you have anything that's on your mind, you can go speak to blank, which is the name of a black so-called manager, and myself. She put herself after the black person. Which is, that's racist right there, because she trying to get two black people in conflict. I say, no, I'm looking past the victim and keeping my eye on her. See? And then when I say what I'm saying to you, I know you're going to go back and tell the warden. And then, see, all she could do is look at me. you know, look at me like she want to call me a nigger. So, but she doesn't do it. But if the look could do it, all right, that's how I'm going to end it. If the look could say nigger, that's what it was. Because that's all she could do was just look at him. So, yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
In the halls of justice. A plus. He made two efforts. Generally, I'd say one is sufficient, but to make two efforts to talk to a non-white person and they continue to mistreat you, A plus. White people have the power to change. Isn't that magic? Like, you can go and begging, really. Isn't that what Mr. Fuller said? If you have to ask more than once, you can go and beg a non-white person nicely. Can you please stop mistreating me? Can you please stop calling me by this other person's or whatever it is? Can you please stop doing that? And they just ignore. Ah, get out of here. You go ask a white person one time. Behavior change. I've seen that before, too. So they are the folks who are responsible for this problem. And again, shows they could solve this problem like immediately if they wanted to. They're not interested in that. They're interested in practicing racism. Do we have any other comments before any folks we missed? Let me say that. Any folks we missed totally. I'll assume we got everybody who dialed in with a hand up. Any other folks with comments, thoughts, observations they wanted to share before we conclude today? We'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah, Gus, I just wanted to say that I found all the suggestions helpful. I will create a word list with those words that were suggested. I think that was great advice. And in terms of the mother, I will ask her just to, you know, respect her as his mother, but it's not going to be a problem because she showed him the video of George Floyd getting murdered to teach him about racism and police brutality. So, if she can show him that, I'm sure she ain't going to have a problem with me, you know, going over a word guide with him so that he can learn these definitions of words. So then when he can understand when I'm explaining a historical person in the context of racism and white supremacy. But thanks all. Great, great suggestion.
Much obliged, Mr. Reed. Black children, they are spectacular. Dr. Welsing used to say that all the time, like, they're brain computers. They can process a lot of information, especially if we don't poison them with Oreo cookies and Minute Maid juice and Doritos and Cheetos and all the rest of it. Their brain computers are amazing. Like, oh yeah, get your word list together, definitions, oh yeah. They can, especially if they've seen the George Floyd footage. Oh, yeah. They can make quick work of it. Absolutely. Any other folks with comments, observations, suggestions to share? Grant, we'll assume folks are satisfied for the day. I posted the report from Miss Castle so you can get more of the details. She was the one talking about her militaristic hair, violent cornrows and such. But I posted it on Twitter. And I linked it. So if you look in the description, Black Talk Radio Network, you'll see it right there, or you can read it rather. It's not that long, but it does have a lot, I thought, of constructive information. Even if you are not a journalist, it should sound painfully familiar. Not smiling, not laughing, disgraceful. We'll be here tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. The compensatory call-in. We'll catch up on what has gone down the past 7 days or so as we conclude Black History Month. wacky times worldwide. We should be here. I believe it's Tuesday. It might be Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday. I'll double check. I think it's Wednesday to make sure it's not Tuesday, but I'm sure it's Wednesday. The author of White Women, make sure I get the full, Mothers of Massive Resistance, White Women and the Politics of White Supremacy, the white author, Elizabeth Gillespie McCrae, should be with us on Wednesday. White Women Do It Better, Cannot Have a System of Racism, White Supremacy Without White Women. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We need all of our brain computers working well, especially if you have offspring or great-grandchildren. Like, woof, that requires a lot of high-powered thinking to make sure that you are sharing all the pertinent information and explaining racism, white supremacy as best we can. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled every time we are in a vehicle, driver or passenger. If we're going to be going out, I submit we should still kind of be hunkered down. It's kind of wacky in some parts. It's still cold and racism, the rioting, the wackiness under their head going on in Rochester, the protest. They didn't indict the officer. It's just been lots of things going down worldwide. I'd be very cautious, alert when you go out. Be mindful of what's happening around you. If it looks like someone is being hostile, violent, loud, I would exit. Unless you left your residence prepared for violent mortal combat, exit. Call the enforcement officials if you need to and all that as you're exiting. But you should be thinking, if a person is out and being loud and hostile, they may be armed and they may have a whole group with them also armed, ready to do harm, not microaggressions. If you didn't leave ready to kill and die, out of there. With all of that, we're sober, we're buckled. If you're driving, you are not on the cell phone. As I said, we need all of our brain computer, and we're trying to minimize contact with the Mark Furmans of the known universe. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy, even when they are degrading us, to gain the attention of a female. Help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. No name calling. That is an easy one right there. I don't know if there was some name calling done to gain the attention of this female, but it's close enough. No name calling is in the 10 stops. It does not solve any problems, and frequently it creates new unnecessary problems and conflict between victims of racism. Really easy one. We could do that for Black History Month. No name calling. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.